Chapter 18. The blacksmith stares at Thomas for a split second with fear in his eyes, before straightening his face and replying,
"You're mistaken."
A thought of hesitation enters Thomas's mind.
Am I mistaken? Is this not the man that I will never forget?
Don't think that you could ever trick me. You were there to protect me every day of my life until I thought I watched you die by those arrows, Thomas declares with absolute conviction. The man squints at Thomas for a moment, and then his eyes suddenly shoot open in horror.
"Your Majesty,"
the man says with a forceful whisper.
"You didn't die,"
Thomas shouts.
"Shh!"
Ransom tries to quiet the prince down.
"Ransom is my surname. Jeff was my twin brother, and the head of the royal guard to your father's kingdom," the man explains.
Troy sits by silently, observing the exchange. Unable to speak, Thomas stares at the man, slightly disappointed that he is not the Ransom that he thought he was.
"My name is Kelly,"
the other Ransom man introduces himself. Thinking back, Thomas remembers seeing Ransom's twin every so often from afar.
"It is so incredible that you are here, but you must not be recognised by anyone,"
Kelly states to Thomas, and looking to Troy as well.
"What news of the kingdom do you have?"
Thomas asks eagerly. Kelly does not answer, and begins to walk over to his work fire. Another few awkward moments pass with no response to Thomas's question. Kelly throws more lumps of coal into his furnace. Finally, Kelly takes a deep breath and replies,
"We've been made slaves, and forced to live in the mines."
Thomas's stomach sinks to the floor as he envisions the children that he used to play with being treated poorly and forced to live in terrible conditions.
"Our people are being worked to death by our oppressors and their empire. Boys are taken to join Tyrone's army, and girls are taken to work in his city in the southern mountains when they are young teenagers,"
Kelly says as a final statement, with his eyes beginning to tear up. Thomas quickly becomes angry and begins pacing the floor.
"I do what I can to smuggle in extra food and medical supplies, but I am only one person and getting older every day,"
Kelly says, wiping the tears from his eyes.
"Who has done this?"
Thomas asks in a demanding voice.
"It is the Southern Kingdom, along with their lawless merchant city in the mountains. They have even seized control of the fishing village to the north as well,"
Ransom says.
"I need to help my people,"
Thomas declares, turning to Troy. Stepping toward Thomas and reaching his hand toward the prince's, Troy quickly replies, "We will help your people." Thomas grabs Troy by his forearm, and Troy grabs Thomas as they lock eyes and seal their commitment.
"I am at your command, your highness,"
Kelly says, stepping forth and bowing before his rightful king. Feeling a sense of courage and power beyond any he has felt before, Thomas stares off in deep, concentrated thought. Standing back up straight, Kelly turns to his workspace, picks up a sheathed dagger and hands it to Thomas.
"For you, sire,"
Kelly says. Taking the blade from Kelly, Thomas notices that the carvings on the handle greatly resemble the masterful carvings of the bridge separating the town.
"This is impressive, thank you,"
Thomas says to Kelly, with a nod of gratitude as he resheathes the blade.
"I wish to see my people,"
Thomas insists with regal body posture and tone of voice.
"If your true identity is ever discovered by the enemy, they will try to kill you,"
Kelly declares. Sighing deeply, Thomas thinks of his rebuttal to Kelly's statement.
"However, I know of secret entrances to the mines on the backside of the mountain that no one else knows exists,"
Kelly exclaims before Thomas has a chance to argue. Thomas nods to Kelly with a pleased look on his face at this revelation.
"I was planning on heading back to the mines with supplies in about a week, but I guess sooner will work as well,"
Kelly Ransom states. "How long do you need before you're ready to depart?" Thomas asks eagerly.
"We can leave the day after tomorrow,"
Kelly declares after a moment of contemplation. "We will help you with anything that you need in your preparations," Troy says, breaking his silence and joining the conversation.
"Thank you. But you will be the most help by not drawing attention to yourselves and keeping low,"
Ransom instructs. With a nod, Thomas extends his hand toward Kelly, and they grasp each other by the forearms. Then, Troy nods to Kelly and they exit Ransom's blacksmith shop. Out in the open of the western part of the city, Thomas and Troy walk with their hoods up, doing their best to blend in with their surroundings. Then, Thomas hears a faint sound of music emanating from somewhere in the town. Thomas instantly begins walking in search of the music, while Troy follows behind without question to where they are going. Coming around the corner of a building, the music becomes louder, and Thomas begins to feel an uneasy excitement course through his body. Quickening his pace, he walks in the direction of the source of the sounds. With buildings blocking their path, Thomas doesn't waste any time and spots an alleyway between two shops. Quickly, he leads Troy to it. "Be aware of your surroundings," Troy instructs as they enter the alleyway that is only wide enough for two of them to walk shoulder to shoulder. The narrow path is about 50 feet long, with various shops along the way. Halfway through the alley, Thomas hears a slight shift of a crate up ahead. A few more steps and a blade stabs out from behind the crate that has fish heads piled up high inside it. The dagger slashes at Thomas's leg as he barely dodges the attack, grabbing the assailant's wrist and breaking it. The attacker barely is able to let out a partial scream as Thomas pulls the person out from behind the crate, puts his gloved hand around their mouth and twists the neck until it breaks. Troy helps lower the hooded person back behind the crate he was hiding behind, and they hastily continue walking through the alley, prepared for more surprise attacks, but none ever come. Pausing a moment to look around the area, Thomas and Troy emerge from the narrow alley and continue walking toward the music that sounds to be just on the next street from them.
"That was the first human life that you have taken," Troy whispers to Thomas as they walk with their heads down through the street. "I know. They made me choose between my life and theirs. It was an easy decision to make," Thomas replies, continuing on his task of discovering the source of the music.
Troy slightly looks up at the prince to see his facial expression being eager with purpose. They come to the final building separating them from the unsettling music. About to round the corner and discover who is playing the familiar, haunting tune, Thomas is grabbed by his cloak and prevented from doing so. Whirling around in outrage, Thomas sees Troy with his finger over his mouth, signalling for him to be quiet. Thomas relaxes his face and takes a deep breath, calming himself instantly.
"Slowly," Troy advises, letting go of Thomas's cloak.
Thomas turns back around and slowly peeks around the corner. A large group consisting of what looks like the workers of the area surround a group of a few musicians, playing various instruments on a raised platform. The music instantly hits Thomas and knocks the breath out of him. The prince recognises most of the men playing in the band from the group that had been at his castle for a month leading up to the night of the overthrow. Rage and anger engulf Thomas as he pulls his dagger from its sheath.
"This is neither the time nor the place for this to happen,"
Troy says, placing his hand on Thomas's arm that holds the blade that was given to him by Kelly moments ago. Thomas's chest rapidly rises and falls from all of the adrenaline pumping through him vigorously. After a couple of deep and slow breaths, he calms down and sheathes his dagger.
"Were they there that night?"
Troy asks as Thomas stares at the men on the stage. A single nod is all the response Thomas offers to Troy's inquiry as he looks closely at one of the musicians in particular. The man has shoulder-length hair that is dark black with random silver strands streaking throughout. An eye patch over his right eye is what Thomas remembers most about him. That and the powerfully energetic way that he leads his band in song. Playing a flute, the man with the eye patch bounces and struts around the stage intimidatingly as a tall, shaggy blonde-haired man passionately plays low frequencies with a large upright bass, matching the one-eyed man's intensity. Playing a guitar is a short, squatty bald man with a thick red beard. The crowd of men becomes aggressive as they slam into each other, cheering for the band, while a group of women stand on both sides of the stage dancing. The song ends and the man with the eye patch reaches into a bag on the stage with both of his hands and pulls out a pile of silver coins. He then proceeds to throw the coins into the crowd, and the spectators erupt into a fury of greed and violence. As the audience fights one another for a few coins to claim, the man pulls out another handful of silver coins and throws again. Laughing, the one-eyed man takes a few gold coins from his pocket and throws them into the crowd as well.
"Come enjoy yourselves at the palace in the southern mountains and win more money, having the time of your life with the most beautiful women in the world,"
the lead musician shouts out to the crowd. The audience erupts in cheers as the band begins to disassemble their performance space. As the crowd disperses, there are multiple dead bodies lying on the ground. Turning back to Troy, Thomas gives him a look of determination before walking past him, back toward Ransom's blacksmith shop. Troy says nothing and walks beside Thomas down the street. Not wanting to go back the way that they came from, Thomas walks around the buildings instead of through the small, dark alleyways. Trying to not stand out from the crowd, they walk at a moderate pace with their hoods up and their heads down. Thomas and Troy burst into Ransom's shop and see that Kelly has a customer. Ransom and the man he is talking to stop talking and look up at Troy and Thomas. Casually, Ransom says to Thomas,
"I'll be with you in a moment."
Turning back to his customer, Kelly says,
"I'll have it ready for you by the end of the day."
The man thanks Ransom and heads toward the door that Thomas stands in the way of. Looking down as the man passes, Thomas hides his face. After the man shuts the door on his way out, Thomas walks over to Ransom hurriedly.
"What is it?"
Ransom asks with concern in his voice. "I may know more about who killed my parents than I thought I did," Thomas declares. The man looks at Thomas quizzically, studying the fired-up prince.
"Who?"
Kelly finally brings himself to ask. "A band of musicians were just now playing in town and promoting a palace in the southern mountains. I remember the leader of the group having an eye patch and being at my castle for an extended stay leading up to that night," Thomas declares with absolute conviction. Kelly's eyes grow wide as he contemplates what Thomas has just told him.
"That's Tyron you're talking about. He's the worst of the worst. He's pure evil,"
Kelly says in a hushed voice. Thomas looks at Kelly, intently wanting to hear more about this one-eyed man. However, Ransom turns to his workspace and picks up a few of his tools and begins his preparations for his tasks for the remainder of the day. After a few moments of silent contemplation, Kelly turns back to Thomas and Troy.
"Follow him back to the palace in the southern mountains and learn as much as you can about his ambitions. He will be heavily guarded by dangerous people, so keep your distance and I will meet you there in a couple of days' time."
Ransom instructs Troy and Thomas while facing away from them. Then, Kelly turns to them and says,
"Take these."
Handing Thomas a pouch, Kelly eagerly watches the prince open it and pull out a star-shaped, razor-sharp piece of metal.
"Far to the east, people use these as throwing weapons," Kelly tells them.
Troy takes one from the bag and examines it before throwing it at a wooden beam. The metal star zips through the shop and sinks into the beam with great force.
"Tyron will be leaving soon, so you will need to be ready. Take this bag of food and supplies and be on your way,"
Ransom says, handing the bag to Troy. "Thank you for everything, and we will meet again shortly," Thomas says to Ransom as he and Troy leave the blacksmith shop. It doesn't take them long to spot the musicians' caravan travelling south out of town. The large group consists of numerous wagons and dozens of horses, filled in by men and women walking on foot. If Thomas didn't already know, he would mistake this group as a battalion in an army marching to battle. The caravan moves slowly, while Thomas and Troy creep through trees and bushes, stalking the procession. Several hours pass before the travelling group comes to a halt. People sporadically disperse into the nearby trees every so often to relieve themselves. Pulling out some dried meat, Troy looks up at the fruit on the tree they are standing under and picks some that hang low enough from its branches. Taking this time to eat, Thomas squats down to rest a moment before the group finally resumes its journey. After a couple of more hours go by, the sun begins to set behind the coast in the distance. The group stops once more, and orders to set up camp are shouted from the men on the horses. The camp is rapidly assembled, while Thomas and Troy seek out the best place for them to rest for the night. After a few minutes, they come upon a tree that has thick limbs and branches that provide excellent cover from the ground below. They climb up and prepare their beds for the night. The sun has disappeared behind the horizon, and darkness descends upon Thomas and Troy hidden in the tree. The camp of the travelling band of entertainers is loud and rowdy with distant sounds of laughter. Dozing off to sleep, Thomas is jolted fully awake and alert from the sound of a twig snapping nearby.